Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
One in the books, two to go. Travis Johnson and Joel Blank till 4 o'clock. Nick Sherratt behind the glass and keeping his finger on the pulse of the text messages. And again, if you have cowardly keyboard confidence, then you don't matter. If you want to put your name to it and you want to make a good take, we will get you involved in the show as we get ready for the Brock Bowl tonight between your Houston Texans and the Denver Broncos. We've already talked about the fact that no matter how much you want to look past it, it is about Brock Osweiler because of the fact that this is his first trip back to Denver. His team did win the Super Bowl last year. He did get all that money, and he hasn't been playing very well. Also, we've mentioned and touched on the fact, as Travis has played for Gary Kubiak, that he feels like there's going to be a little bit more than just your average game from Kubes tonight because of the fact that he wants to make a statement because, let's face it, he didn't want to leave when he was shown the door. So that's interesting. We've talked a little bit about the defense. We've talked a lot about the fact that the Denver defense is going to be all over with their ears pinned back trying to get to Brock. I think they're going to load the box. Trav says they probably don't even have to, depending on how the coaching staff calls the game and how much they get the ball to Lamar Miller early. Then we started talking a little bit about draft classes and the fact that a former Texans number two pick that was basically thrown on the scrap heap very early in his career in DJ Swearinger was a starter last night in the game for Arizona in a defensive struggle for both teams, which showed just how good both defenses can be. DJ Swearinger was all over the place. Jason tweeted in saying, DJ's issues were non-football related. No, he was a knucklehead here. Don't blame team for moving on, talent notwithstanding. I say to you in response, Jason, in rebuttal, well, guess what? That's on the general manager and his staff to know that he was a knucklehead before he came out, so then you don't draft him. But if you're going to draft him, then you take the time to make sure that he knows the culture, the rules, and how to stay on the field and on the roster so that it's clearly explained, clearly defined, and then you let him make those mistakes. But I don't think that was the case. I don't think either way that was done, and I think that's just another in the long list of things that have gone wrong with Rick Smith in his draft classes that have led to mistakes that the Texans are still trying to dig their way out of.
Yeah, I mean, even though he was a knucklehead, we all knew he was. I mean, but at the end of the day, they knew he was no different than the guy that they drafted. Like, they knew who he was. So that, to me, wasn't the issue. I think the issue became when he started getting the stupid penalties.
Yep.
You know, he was celebrating, ho-hum tackles. He was,
talking smack to Peyton Manning.
Talking smack to Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning proceeded to roast us.
Yep.
I think that all factored in to his exit, and now you see what he could have been if somebody took the time out. Like, I mean, Bruce Arians has taken the time and gotten the right people in place out there with the people on his staff with the Larry Foots and the Preston Buckners to be able to get him
or Brenton Buckner, right?
Yeah, Brenton Buckner.
Okay, you said Preston. I didn't know what you were talking about. I thought that was Breast Care Awareness Month.
Oh, Lord. This guy.
Just asking a question.
Hey, so, but
those, I'll take it a step further than that, because you talked about one of them, and I was telling this to Lisa's mom last night, because she's a huge Larry Fitzgerald fan. I said, don't think for a second that you take a guy like the Honey Badger, who was a mess coming out of college, though he was loaded with talent. Don't think for a second Patrick Peterson isn't the reason that kid resurrected his career.
He's the whole reason. When he left Louisiana, when he got in trouble the second time in a while, he went down to South Florida to Pompano and actually stayed with Pat's parents, or stayed with Big Pat and Pat's mama. You know what I mean? So that's who he stayed with and trained with Pat's dad every single day. And then he was the one that talked him into drafting him and said, listen, you'll get him here. He'll stay with me. I'll get a roommate and he'll stay with me and I'll keep him right. Well, the foundation had been laid for that last year and some change that he hadn't been playing. He's been living in South Florida with this man's family. The foundation was laid then, so now he understands this is my last shot. This is my last opportunity. DJ Swearinger, when he left here, and went to Tampa Bay. He went to Tampa Bay and was on the practice squad.
Yes, he was originally.
This was a
yep.
second round pick on a practice squad.
Yep.
If I don't think if you don't think that's humbling, then I don't then you don't know anything about this game. That I think that itself humbled him to be, you know what? I got to look back and see how can I be better.
But we talk about what's the wake up call? What's the one thing we talked about in the Josh Brown situation too? If it's the money thing or it's an ego thing, but you gotta sometimes you gotta look at the negative and say, hey, you know what? I see that the only way to reach this guy is blank.
His
and then
pockets,
you go to it, whether it's the wallet or the embarrassment of going to the practice squad or whatever it is. But then again, that's part of being a good player personnel department, a good general manager, a good staff on a professional team. So you get Larry Fitzgerald on one side of the ball, Patrick Peterson on the other side of the ball, along with all the coaches you're talking about in Arizona, and you say, look, we have paved the way for you to succeed. Now it truly is on you. But if you don't do the other due diligent things to make sure that the kid has every opportunity to succeed, well, then it's not on the kid, it's on you.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I totally agree. You have to have that. If you're gonna draft these people, and I don't want to say these people, but I say if you're going to draft these young men that have one or two issues, guys that come from nothing, guys who don't know how to manage money, guys who don't know how to manage their time. God, if you see the potential in them to say, I'm going to spend this $1 million pick on this kid, or I'm going to spend X, Y, and Z dollars, and then don't want to put in the time to get him right and to let him and to teach him how to be a pro, everybody say, oh, he's there. He should just know. No, how do you just know?
You talked about it last week. It's more important sometimes all the off-the-field stuff than it is all the coaching and stuff on-field.
Yes.
Because of such a huge adjustment going from being just a piece of the puzzle to being someone with a whole lot of money in their pocket and a whole lot of extra free time.
No question. I mean, there's a four-month span. We always say there's a four-month span where it's strictly football, where if you don't want to go out, you don't go out, you don't do any of that stuff. And guys don't know how to deal with the fact that when I leave work, I don't have to go home.
Yeah.
I don't have to go to my dorm room.
Yeah.
There's no study hall to go to. So now you have to be able to, you have to teach these kids how to be adults. You got to teach them how to study.
You may not want to babysit, but you got to be a babysitter as much as a coach and a guidance person.
And that's why we look back and say, it's some coaches that always keep you there late. They always keep your hours late. They always make meetings for no reason. And you wonder why they do that. Well, that's when they have a young team. They're just trying to keep track of guys.
Keenan was very open about it.
Yeah.
When he had even guys like Stephon Diggs to try and make sure that, hey, look, part of the job is keeping them in a structured environment so they don't go off the rail.
They will.
And, you know, I look at the draft class of DJ Swearinger, Jason, for all those guys that were out there saying, well, it's on DJ's fault. Well, let's look at the entire draft and see how many of the guys stuck around. DeAndre Hopkins was a no-brainer in the first round. Pick 27. It's a hell of a pick at 27, right? Swearinger, second-round pick, gone quickly. Third-round pick, offensive tackle, Brennan Williams, gone. Third-round pick, pick 33, Sam Montgomery. We all know that Sam Montgomery and fourth-round pick Trevardo Williams,
along with the undrafted free agent Willie, I can't remember Willie's last name,
were blowing smoke in a hotel room on the road during the regular season. That'll get you every time. So none of those guys are around. David Quisenberry, God bless him, on IR, but still trying to come back. Could be a heck of a player and a contributor.
I think they should let him back this year.
So you got Hopkins, Quisenberry in the sixth round, and Ryan Griffin with the last pick in the sixth round. The last Texans pick in the sixth round was all they had that year. So three of a potential 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, so you get 30% right in a draft class. That's not good, people.
It's not good. That's never good.
There you go. So, and that's just one draft. Now, even when we go back and we look at, you know, the year that they took Suofilo in the second round, you just see it on paper. You go, okay, because he's seeing some time starting. But when you contemplate, you could have had Derek Carr instead, and you look what Derek Carr is doing.
Yes.
And I saw what he was doing yesterday, and I had people asking me, and I said, hey, Texans could have had him. They didn't like the last name. They were a little bit scared based on what they had been through.
They definitely were.
You can't be scared when you're a general manager.
No, you can't. You got to look past the little stuff like that. When we come back, man, let me know what you think was our best draft class ever here.
I know it wasn't the one they drafted you, but I'll definitely look at it in depth and I'll get back to you. You guys can too. Chime in on what the best draft class ever has been in Houston Texans history and how many have they had. It could be as simple as one or two choices. It could be multiple choice. We'll let you do the details as well. You can be a part of the show. 713-780-ESPN. We are ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Hey, it's Joel Blank, Travis Johnson, up till 4 o'clock, and sometimes we get really, really good contributions from our listenership. And they really want to tune in, and they want to dial into what we're talking about. We're talking about the draft classes of the Houston Texans. Travis asked the question before the break. Wanted to know, from your perspective, what was the best draft class of all time in Texans history? We've covered some of the bad ones. There are some good ones. Trav, you want to let it, I should say, simmer for a while before we get into it so that maybe people chime in? Is that the best way to handle that?
We can. It doesn't matter.
I think you personally probably have quite an idea of what you think the best draft class of all time.
Yeah, of course, the 06 class. The 06 class is, I mean, it's Charlie Cashley's last class. You know, it was a class.
Okay, Charlie Cashley, okay.
But it was a class that got him fired because they didn't want freaking Mario or D'Amico.
How'd they turn out?
D'Amico's probably our best linebacker that we've ever had here.
Boy, and, leader, too. Talk about leader.
And Mario is... I think J.J. now is past Mario for the all-time sack leader. You know what I mean? But and then you had, who else was in that class? Owen Daniels was in that class. The greatest tight end to ever play here. Eric Winston was in that class.
I got it for you. Hang on. I got it for you because with the CTE stuff, it's hard sometimes. Mario Williams, D'Amico Ryans, Charles Spencer, who spent some time on the offensive line, and Eric Winston.
Spencer was going to be a perennial Pro Bowler until that knee against Indy. He started as a rookie and was killing. He was killing people.
God, the only guy that didn't make a contribution out of that draft class was Wally Lundy, the running back out of Virginia,
and he kind of was. I think Wally was who? What other running backs were in that class? Tell me the rest of that class.
No, because I'm not on that right now. I've only got the Texans drafts.
Yeah, so I'm saying, I'm telling me the rest of the Texans class that year.
Okay, so that class was Mario Williams, D'Amico Ryans, Charles Spencer, Eric Winston, Owen Daniels, Wally Lundy, David Anderson, the receiver.
Yeah.
So basically, six of the seven panned out.
Yeah.
And that was a Casserly draft. Remember that. Yeah. So don't go giving it to Rick when that was a Casserly draft.
Yeah, that was a Casserly.
05 was a complete crap to bed.
Yeah, it was.
We don't even want to talk about it.
It was.
First round was some guy named Travis Johnson. That turned out.
We didn't have a second round.
By the way, did people realize that they got that pick from New Orleans?
Yeah, but that pick was just, it was originally a 13th pick, and they traded down from New Orleans.
Yeah. Probably could have traded down lower than that.
Yeah.
Then they got Vernon Morency.
Well, they couldn't have because then I wish they would have because then I would have went to Cincinnati.
Which played your defense.
Yeah. That's why they traded to 16 and not past 17 because Cincinnati already knew they were going to take me.
Still. Disturbing. Okay, so Vernon Morency, who played a little bit, had a cup of coffee, right?
He played for your Packers.
Green Bay Packers as well. Probably played better for Green Bay than he did.
That's the pick they actually, when they traded down to 16 with...
from Dallas.
When they traded down from 16 to 13, they got that pick from in the trade with... New Orleans. So that's how because we didn't have a second round pick at that time.
Oh, I'm sorry. Vernon Morency, you're right. You didn't. The Texans didn't have a second round pick. Travis Johnson in the first, Vernon Morency in the third, Jerome Mathis in the fourth, Drew Hodgson
from Arizona State.
Arizona State in the fifth, C.C. Brown in the sixth, Kenneth Petaway in the seventh. So basically you and Morency and.
No, I mean, Petaway played. Petway played for, he ended up going, as a matter of fact.
But he didn't play here.
He did play here.
Not really.
Yeah, he did. He ended up getting suspended, I think, for PEDs.
Oh.
But
now the truth comes out. You get to where I'm getting at.
But Petway actually played here.
So what was Rick's first draft class? 07?
The 07 class was his first draft class.
So 07, first draft class of Rick Smith, and right out of the gates, he takes Amobi Okoye.
Yeah, Amobi Okoye.
That didn't work out so well.
Amobi was 18 years old at the time.
So after Okoye, Jacoby Jones in the third, who turned out okay, although you people in Houston are very hard on him. But then Fred Bennett, Brandon Harrison, Brandon Fry, Casey Studdard, quite a while for the Texans, and Zach Dials, who played quite a while for the Texans. So overall, would you call that a successful draft?
That's a pretty good draft.
Okoye, no, but Jacoby Jones, Fred Bennett, Studdard, Dials, okay. You guys have some calls you want to get in on this, so let's go Todd first. You want to talk about DJ Swearinger's draft class.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
Pretty good. Look, no offense to Travis's draft class, but obviously the best draft class is going to be the NFL Defensive Player of the Year, reigning Defensive Player of the Year. I believe it was 2010, right?
11.
J.J. Watt. Doesn't matter who else was drafted in that class. You got a two-time reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year out of it. So that's going to be your most successful draft.
I would disagree with you, Todd, simply because one player does not make a draft class ever. And the reason why I'm so hard on Rick Smith is when we go back to the, was it the 14 draft class? The 13 draft class, because of the fact that you had a third round pick and a fourth round pick that, again, when you draft in a draft class, you expect to get guys that if they're not going to be starters this year, they're at least going to be backups, they're going to be special teams players, and they're going to be working every day towards eventually being contributors to your team in more ways than even that, but they have to contribute right away. When you lose high draft picks like that, and you lose it for a lot of reasons other than just the flat-out fact that you didn't realize or you didn't do enough homework or you passed on other guys because this guy comes in and then he gets into a lot of trouble, that's on you. That's on the personnel department. I don't care that they got J.J. Watt number one in 2011. I care about the fact that everybody else in that draft class probably was somewhat of a reach, but the fact that they got Derek Newton in the seventh round, I think that's a great pick. I think that's a great pick in the seventh round. But you got Rock Carmichael in the fourth round. There was a guy that they constantly were waiting to step up as a defensive back. He never did. They got Brandon Harris in that draft class. Now, look, Brooks Reed for a year or two played okay.
Brooks Reed played good.
Yeah, then he got overpaid. But he got overpaid somewhere else, so that's not on you. Shiloh Keough never had the speed to be a defensive back in this league, but they drafted him in the fifth round.
Where did he go, Nebraska?
Yeah, he went to Idaho.
Idaho.
T.J. Yates, fifth round, North Carolina. Decent pick. Had a cup of coffee in big-time situation with the Texans. Can't fault that. But Derek Newton, the seventh round, is a great pick. Cheetah Ozungwe,
or whatever. I think that's from Rice.
Defensive lineman from Rice.
Cheddar. We call him Cheddar.
Okay, so Cheddar only better. Yeah. Not a bad pick in the seventh round. Yeah, you can't go wrong there. Now, talking about seventh rounders, I'm a lot more lenient than I would be on third, fourth, and fifth round picks.
Yeah, no question. But, I mean, one player doesn't make a draft class.
No, for sure. So that's the point I was trying to make, Todd. Don't take it personal, but that's just my rebuttal to your call, but we appreciate you calling. Chad, best Texans draft class, welcome to the show. What do you got?
I mean, y'all already hit on the 06. I think that's probably the best draft class, and you just talked about the 11.
Yeah.
I think the 9 was actually pretty decent. They had Brian Cushion, Connor Barwin, Glover Quinn, James Casey. Those are pretty much big names.
That actually was.
And Bryce McCain and Troy Nolan. You're right. That's a pretty solid underrated class. Did you get that?
And then 2010, they had Kareem Jackson. Who was it? Earl Mitchell.
That is on the show. Chad, you want to get caller number 10 off the contest line and come back to us?
Yeah.
What? Okay.
All right. Well, go ahead. Take caller number 10, Chad, and we'll talk amongst ourselves, and we'll get back to you the next time you call in. Thanks for the call. Hey, John, you're on the phone with us. If this is really about Lovie Smith, this one's going in the wrong direction in a hurry. But because we love the people out there and we are men of the people, we bring you into the show, John. What do you got?
What's going on, man? How y'all doing today?
Good, man. You?
I'm doing well, thanks. I just wanted to know, man. I'm not really a Tampa Bay fan, but just a curious question. With the firing of Lovie Smith, how much do you think that's the reason they're struggling now?
Oh, I think it's a lot. I mean, because now you take a guy like Dirk Cutter, who was only the offensive guy, and now you put him in the position of head coach and slash Judas. You know what I mean? Because you're looking like, man, I brought this guy in. This guy, We don't know if he backstabbed Lovey for the job. I mean, they were moving up, and then to get fired, I think that has a big question mark on everybody. I think in that locker room questions that thing, and they look at him a little differently. Even as much as he's the head coach, they say, "Oh, we support him. He's our guy." I think you look at a guy like that different when.
But look at why they're struggling. They're not struggling because of the offense. So Dirk Cutter's doing what he did, right? As an offensive coordinator,
yes,
he's got Jameis playing decent.
Jameis playing decent.
He's got Mike Evans playing well. If he had a healthy running game, when he was healthy, the running game was decent.
Yeah.
The other side of the ball, though, to cover your point, he's not a defensive coach. He didn't bring in a defensive guy, evidently, because the defense has given up a ton of points.
Yeah.
Niners got a 14-0 lead in the first quarter on them real quick.
Yeah, quick. Very quick. But, I mean, but you lose your defensive guy, and you not only do you lose your defensive guy, but then you lose your offensive guy because he's not the guy. I mean, yeah, he might call the plays. But he's not the guy strictly focused on offense. He is focused on everything.
So there you have it. There's a quick breakdown of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We can get Travis Johnson a Monday through Friday gig in South Florida where he'll be commenting on Tampa Bay Buccaneers football from now through the end of the season. But that's not going to happen because we're keeping him right where he is. That means at 2:30 p.m., you get a free preview of the Denver Broncos tonight from a Denver perspective. Rod Sharon will join us next from ESPN Denver. We'll have that and a whole bunch more. ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Football season.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joe Blake, Travis Johnson, until 4 o'clock, Nick Sharara behind the glass, and we will get more to your draft conversations because plenty of you want to get in between Twitter, text, and calls. You people still want to talk about the best and the worst draft classes of all time in Houston Texans history, and we've got some commentary on that. Before we do that, we got to break down the big game tonight. That is between the Denver Broncos and your Houston Texans. I have called it the Brock Bowl. I have called it for a reason, because of the fact that whether you like it or not, it's the first time that one Brock Osweiler will be returning to the Mile High City since he left for greener pastures, so to speak, and a lot greener in terms of the almighty dollar, as he went and joined the Houston Texans, took $17 million a year, took 2 years guaranteed, 4 years total, and he just hasn't played that well since he started the process of becoming the franchise quarterback of the Houston Texans trap. The good news is they're winning some games. They're in first place. The bad news is they still have yet to beat a really big-time quality opponent. They lost badly to Minnesota. They lost badly to New England. Now tonight, another big-time test with another big-time defense. We know New England's defense was good. We knew Minnesota's was better. You and I kind of thought at the start of the year, and now that they're getting healthy, that Denver's was the best. So without further ado, Raj, thank you so much for joining us. You got Joel. You got Travis Johnson. We appreciate your time, especially on a game day. Wanted to get your feelings on this game tonight. I'm calling it the Brock Bowl. I know that some people don't think it's a big enough name, but he still left Denver, came to Houston, got the money, hasn't played well. Your thoughts on the game this evening?
I think Brock Bowl is probably a very good way to put it. And obviously, there's a lot of ties between both teams with Gary Kubiak and Wade Phillips and Bill Kolar, et cetera, up here in Denver, kind of going both directions. But, you know, here in Denver, certainly Brock Osweiler has been the story of this game. In many ways, guys, and this is pretty telling to the defending Super Bowl champions, this was the game the fan base circled when the schedule came out. They wanted to know when Brock Osweiler was going to be coming back to Denver. Locally, a lot of us thought this might be the NFL kickoff opening that, you know, the defending champ always has. I think nationally, the Super Bowl rematch maybe had a little bit more attraction than locally here with Brock coming back to town. But in many ways, this is the most anticipated game of the year. This is the guy that we thought for years Brock Osweiler would be the heir apparent to Peyton Manning, especially after he came in last year and won the game, but it helped them get to, although he got pulled in the last game, but helped them get the home field advantage and eventually a Super Bowl championship. So it is a extremely interesting atmosphere here in Denver, especially considering the Broncos are coming off of two consecutive losses. And not only is it a game the Broncos fans want to win, in many ways it's one they need to win.
Now, Raj, this is Travis. Question, man. How big of a bullet do you think, do y'all feel like y'all dodged by what you've seen out of Brock in these first, in the sample size of games, this first quarter and a half of the season? And is everybody seem like they're reluctant that, I mean, they're glad that they didn't make that decision and pull that trigger on keeping him in Denver?
You know, it's funny you mention that because there was some feelings of that right after the move came by. The move went down with Houston, and people saw the money, and there was a little bit of that, but obviously it's been vindicated that Brock hasn't played particularly well this season, and that actual phrase you just worded, dodging a bullet, has come up quite a bit this season. Did the Broncos dodge a bullet on Brock? And I think a lot of people feel like they had, that the team did. That said, I don't know many Bronco fans who honestly wouldn't say they wouldn't have rather have had Brock come back. It would have alleviated a lot of uncertainty and questions at the quarterback position. They wouldn't have had to use their first-round pick on a quarterback, which they did. They could have used it at a different position. And, you know, had Brock stayed here with Gary Kubiak in the system, he played okay in last year, not great, but not terrible. Let me put it this way. I don't think anybody would expect he'd be playing worse than what Trevor Siemian has been doing. But when you look at the money that they would have had to pay, and no matter what the Broncos try to say about, they try to form it as a position of, you know, they just couldn't match the money that Brock wanted in Houston. They moved their line in the sand several times, all the way up to going to, I think it was about $16 million per season. So they wanted Brock Osweiler back. The Broncos did. I guess we'll never exactly know what would have happened had he re-signed. I don't think C.J. Anderson would be here anymore. I don't think they would have been able to match Miami's offer sheet on him. I don't think they would have been able to extend Emmanuel Sanders had they done that. And for all I know, they may not have been able to get that Von Miller deal done, which was so difficult to do right at the deadline. So it could have been a much different-looking Broncos team right now had they re-signed Brock Osweiler, just because of all the funds they would have had to allocate. Now, because they're on essentially the Seattle Seahawks model of trying to build around a young, cheap rookie quarterback, they've got a couple years before they can figure that out, and they can afford to pay some of these guys around them.
You're listening to Rod Sherritt, ESPN Radio 97.5 from Denver. Raj, let me follow up with the, you know, you said about $16 million per year. Was it, because, you know, I know we'd all heard that, yeah, the per year was the numbers, but the guarantees I heard was only about $7 million in guaranteed money, and the rest would have to be earned within this year and in the future. How accurate was that rumor that was out there, and how much guaranteed, truly guaranteed money against injury and skill was he actually guaranteed out there in Denver?
Travis, it's funny you mention that, because it's a bit of a mystery to the actual number the Broncos went up to in terms of the guaranteed money. The terms you're stating, from my understanding at least, were initially what the Broncos offered. And as the process progressed, especially over about a 24-hour period leading into free agency back in March, those numbers went up and up and up. I never got a confirmed amount, nor did anybody I know of, on how much Denver was at the end of the day willing to guarantee, other than they drastically increased their offer as time moved through. The last number that I remember was in the mid-30s, like maybe 32 to 34 million guaranteed, somewhere in that range. But again, it was never exactly confirmed, because when Brock signed with Houston, the Broncos essentially took the company line that he took the money, and that they just didn't have any ability to match the money. But from people that I had spoken with that were close with Brock and close to the negotiations, it was not as much about the money as much as him wanting to get to Houston, that was the situation he wanted to be in, that he preferred Bill O'Brien's offense to Gary Kubiak's, because Bill O'Brien's offense was more similar to what Adam Gase ran here when Peyton Manning was setting passing records, and Gary Kubiak's offense is more of a balanced offense that takes a lot of the control out of the hands of the quarterback. And then you always have the questions of how much did the fact he was pulled against San Diego factor in? Did Brock truly believe he should have been the starting quarterback that won Super Bowl 50? All those things kind of played into it. But Travis, as far as the money itself goes, I never got a definitive answer on how much was guaranteed, other than it went up drastically as Denver began to realize how aggressively Rick Smith and Houston were going after him.
Talking with Rod Sharon of ESPN Denver. And, Rod, I got a two-part question for you because we know what we hear from our listeners and our fans in terms of the calls and this game tonight and almost another must-win for the Texans, even though they're in first place, just to prove that they can play with a contender in the AFC. But from your perspective and from a fan's perspective, is it a must-win for the Broncos? You've lost two in a row after winning four straight. You've lost to Atlanta. You've lost to San Diego. So their offense hasn't played really well. It's Simeon one day. It's Paxton Lynch the next. So is it a must-win from a Broncos perspective? And what are the fans saying in terms of getting the build-up for this game?
In terms of the fans' perspective, it's about as close to one as you're going to have for this early in the season and a defending Super Bowl champion. I mean, you pretty much well laid it out there with the two consecutive losses that they haven't played well in. And I'll throw some gas on the fire. The rest of the AFC West is playing very well. The Raiders won again yesterday. They're at 5-2. The Chiefs look to be on the right track. I believe they're now at 4-2. And then you've got San Diego, who had all these crazy things happen to them early in the season to lose games. And now suddenly they've beaten the Broncos. They go into Atlanta and get a win there. And that actually gives them a common opponent leg up on both Denver and Oakland, as both those teams have lost to Atlanta. So not only do the Broncos need to win this game just for their own psyche of two straight losses, but the rest of the AFC West is just looking like it's going to be a dogfight all season. So from that perspective, yes, I think this is one of those kinds of games. The Broncos have had an extra couple days to get ready for it since their last game was on Thursday. They're at home. They lose this game. They lose three in a row, two consecutively at home. They lose to Brock Osweiler. They've got San Diego coming back in here next week, presumably on a roll. This thing could get out of hand quickly for the defending champions if they don't take care of business tonight at Mile High against the Texans.
I was going to say, Big John looking so good for letting Brock go for greener pastures and keeping the guys he's got. But if he falls and swallows the sword tonight, so to speak, and then, like you said, has to look at San Diego in the rearview mirror or in the windshield coming up with the way they're playing, this whole thing could backfire in a hurry for all of the kind of braggadociousness that the general manager has done since he seemingly thought he made the right call. But from a Broncos perspective, Raj, I'm just curious. You know, Travis and I have gone back and forth on this. Do you expect to see them do a Belichick-like thing, take away Lamar Miller in the running game, load the box, and say, Brock, beat us? Because the guys in the locker room have already said they really look forward to him throwing it to them. They want to kill him. I know it's, you know, it's professional sports, but I'm just interested in your perspective, what you expect the wrinkles to see tonight.
I expect the Broncos defense to, in some ways, arrogantly play the way they always play, which is believe that their corners can defend the other team's receivers one-on-one, man-on-man, no matter who they're playing against. I wouldn't necessarily say load the box, but I believe stopping the run will remain their top priority. They have so much confidence in their secondary that they'll believe it's Deep Talib can man up DeAndre Hopkins and take him out of the ballgame. They'll believe that Chris Harris and Bradley Roby can man up against Houston's other receivers and take them out of the ballgame as well. That's how they play defense, no matter what the week is, what the opponent is. It's bitten them at times in the past. It hasn't bitten them badly. Last year, Steelers game comes to mind. They manned up on Antonio Brown all day, didn't give him any more respect as a great receiver, and he burned them in that one game. But they don't particularly change the way that they play. So I believe Brock Osweiler will have opportunities to face one-on-one coverage with his receivers against Denver's cornerbacks. Now, the pass rush is really the key to what makes all this work with the Broncos. Von Miller, Shane Ray, Shaquille Barrett, of course, DeMarcus Ware is out right now. Now, if they can get pressure on Brock Osweiler, that's different. But one of the misconceptions, and you guys know Wade Phillips' defense, because you've seen it down there, is that he's this very aggressive, blitzing defensive coordinator.
But he's not.
He's clear to us each week. He's not necessarily aggressive blitzing. He's just creative in how he brings pressure. He's not one to necessarily take chances and bring 7, 8, 9 guys all game long, but he is going to bring pressure from different places. Brandon Marshall told us last week, you know, they want to get to Brock. They want to hit Brock. I know one thing that they will be watching for. It's something we've talked about for years, watching Brock Osweiler at practice every day. It is startling, and I don't know if it's happening in Houston right now, but at least here, the amount of passes that a 6'7" quarterback could get batted down to the line of scrimmage, it's remarkable how often we've seen it happen. And I heard several Bronco defensive players mention, hey, it's just like old times against Brock, get those hands up. So
Raj, before we let you go, because we're running short on time, though, I want to throw this out. I just want to get your perspective. If you got to pick a winner tonight and a score, what do you see unfolding tonight at Sports Authority Field?
I think Denver needs this game, and they need it badly, especially on the offensive side of the ball. The Texans have struggled with run defense, and that's where Denver wants to get things going. I'll take the Broncos in this game, 24-14.
There you have it.
Raj, quick question. Do your friends call you Raj Al Ghul?
I've heard that one before. That one is a good one. I'm a big Batman fan myself.
Oh, there it
is. I have heard that one. Brandon Stokely, who's my host, I got in the air right now. He likes to call me Raj Mahal. So.
Oh, the Raj Mahal is very good, too. We like that. We're good about the plays on words with the names. But definitely appreciate your time, Raj. We definitely would love to do it again. But we appreciate the insight. So do the fans here. And keep doing what you're doing. And hopefully we'll have you on again real soon.
Sounds great. Maybe we'll talk before a playoff matchup, guys.
That'd be great. Rod Sharon has been our guest with our sister station ESPN in Denver. Appreciate his insight on the Brock Bowl tonight. Travis and I are going to be back with much more ESPN 97.5 FM. The kind you don't
take home to my body. ESPN 97.5.
The biggest thing in this game in order to last is to have belief in yourself, you know, because when the owner stops believing in you and the GM stops believing in you and coaches stop believing in you, sometimes all you have is yourself. So, you know, that's kind of something I've had to deal with before, something I'm dealing with now. And, you know, I just do my best to prepare and be the best quarterback I can be. I don't know what decision they're going to make or what Geno's health is going to be like, but I think I should start every week.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
That was not Billy Idol, and he was not dancing with himself, but he was talking about how much confidence you have to have in yourself. That was one former Texan and one current New York Jet, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was benched this week in favor of Geno Smith. It didn't last long because Geno, we find out now, has torn his ACL. He's done for the year.
Dude.
Ryan had to come back in. And Fitzy did his best to try and lead his team to victory, but afterwards had quite a bit to say, as you just heard, about his franchise. Travis, your thoughts?
If Geno Smith didn't have bad luck, he wouldn't have any luck. I mean, this kid, he goes from being a starter, having a decent year, to getting punched in the face, to losing his job.
The punched in the face thing, did he not have that coming to
he
him?
He
kind of
had
bit?
It deserved. He kind of deserved that one. Right. But to get punched in the face and get your... I've been punched in the face before, and I'd always take it, eat, and then beat up the guy who got punched in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be a fragile individual to get punched in the face and get your jaw broke. And then come back and tear an ACL. Like, he got to be made of paper mache. Got to be. But I will say this. I mean, Fitzpatrick, he was spot on. I think the problem when you have guys like Fitzpatrick, he's so smart. He'll cuss you out without using curse words.
He's an Ivy League guy. I was telling Nick before the show, he's a Harvard guy.
Yeah.
He is very well educated. Sometimes, though, that might be a detriment.
Oh, but in the NFL, it's always a detriment because they never like the guy who's too smart. You know, they never want the genius to be on their football team.
Right.
They want the guys that need them. And when you have when you're Harvard educated, yeah, you need them, but you really don't need them. You got to think about it. The man was saying no to this money earlier in the year.
See, okay,
and
this is what I'm talking about. We talked about it in the Josh Brown situation about how you get to someone by bringing it in their pocketbook, digging in their wallet, right? At the same time, how do you get to a fan base? It's real easy. In the case of Brock Osweiler, you take all the money and then you don't perform. Not that there's any fault of his because they offered it to him in the first place, right?
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, you take this situation with Fitzpatrick and you say, okay, if he'd have just signed for what the Jets offered him at the start of the offseason, everything would have been hunky-dory in the world. Brandon Marshall said, Fitzy's my guy, got to have him back. He's our leader. We want him. All this stuff. But then he started holding out. Then he started pissing people off. Then he started asking for, like, big-time quarterback money. And at the end of it, it seemed kind of contentious, but they got a deal done. And then when you make mistakes, it's going to be magnified, and you put it in the media center of the universe.
Yes.
And it gets blown up even bigger.
Well, that's because a lot, I mean, I put a lot of it on because he wasn't able to prepare like he would have normally been. If they would have gave him the money they gave him when they gave it to him in the beginning of the offseason, I'm pretty sure he probably would have took it.
But Trav, I know you're going to say this is a business, and I know you, and I want you to look at it from a player's perspective.
Yeah, of course.
But my whole thing is, look, he had maybe back in his Buffalo days, you know, he started to get to where he could be considered like a mid-tier, upper echelon type quarterback a little bit, right? But he hasn't really. That was like a quick flash in the pan.
They paid him at Buffalo too, didn't they?
A little bit, yeah, yeah, they did. So he's gotten his money in the past, but he kind of did okay with the Texans, right? He had a decent year last year, but for him to come in and just try and break the bank.
He
had a good year, right. But then he comes in and expects that's going to be another big payday.
They're paying
back. The Jets weren't going
to
do that.
They're paying backup quarterbacks $5 to $7 million a year.
Okay, and they offered him like 11, and that wasn't good enough.
That's not good enough. Not if my backup's making $5 or $6 million.
Well, I'm telling
that's
you,
not good
based
enough.
On what we saw of Ryan Fitzpatrick, well, he doesn't have the arm strength. He can't throw the deep ball. Yes, he's highly intelligent. But overall, it wasn't enough for me to say he deserved $17 million.
But they gave it to him. So if they gave it to him, good for him. Thank you, sir. Come again. I don't care what he does with it. I mean, for the sake of the radio and us talking about it, yes, I would love for him to be playing well, or if he's playing bad, we can talk either way. But at the same time, as a former player, I'm saying good for you. Good for you. Keep getting, if you can stand on top of the bank with a crowbar, go ahead and stand on top of the bank with a crowbar. Because this is a guy who's made great money since he's been in the league. And he's an Ivy League guy, so guess what? The money he's made, I'm pretty sure he's probably either doubled it already at some point, or he can go out in the business world with that Harvard degree and with that NFL with that NFL shield at his back and go make just as much money. He could have made that $11 million off
but
the field.
But fans don't care about that. The fans just say, hey, we paid him. You better play like it.
Hey, he don't care either.
But at the same time, from a fan's perspective, as you said about the wallet, you can get to it to try and motivate players. But at the same time, when you get paid and the wallet gets full, the fans expect that you play like the money that you got paid to play like. And when Brock doesn't do it, he hears about it. Ryan Fitzpatrick is really hearing about it because he held out and thought that he deserved more and more and more and more and put the organization in the corner. So now he's not playing well. Fans are attacking him.
They're going to attack. And fans are going to be fans because you got all these people who root for these teams who don't make $4.25 at their 30-40 hour week jobs, they're going to feel a certain type of way regardless when you get millionaires arguing with billionaires over the amount of money you're going to pay me to play a kid's game. So regardless, the fans, for us, because we love you fans, but as far as a player, you can care less about what the fans have to say.
We care about what you have to say. 713-780-ESPN. We are here with 2 hours in the books, 1 hour to go up until 4 o'clock. We are ESPN 97.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.